Today's event is brought to you by the Association, used to be called Association Conflict Resolution Hawaii Chapter, but now is called the Campus, the Conflict Resolution Alliance, which is made up of various individuals from all over the community. You can check us out at crahawaii.org to learn a little bit further about our organization as well as what we do. Along with that organization, we have the Hawaii State Bar Association Alternative Dispute Resolution Section joining us, the Mediation Center Pacific, the Center for Alternative Dispute Resolution, Campus Climate Initiatives, and as well as the Matsunaga Institute for Peace. And with that, I am going to... So I'll be pinning people. So that means that on your screen, if you happen to have the format where you see lots of boxes, you will only start seeing one person that I pinned. So I'm going to be introducing Amrita Malik, who's our Campus Climate Initiative person, who will be, how do we do this? Pin video. There we go. And okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, welcome everyone. And thank you so much for joining us. As Jose was saying, when we first started thinking about this event, we were trying to find a place that could accommodate 20, maybe 30 people. So being able to share this conversation with 140 of you currently is really a privilege and one of the best silver linings of this online world we find ourselves inhabiting. And again, when we were thinking about what this event would be, Jose and I discussed the importance of addressing the idea of self-care. As peacemakers, conflict resolvers, problem solvers, our instinct is, and our training, our passion is really to serve our communities, our families, the people around us in order to make things better. But the old philosophy or the psychology axiom of you can't give what you don't have is so true. And then the pandemic struck and these questions just became all the more urgent. And fortunately for us, we were so lucky to be able to have Dr. Maya Sotero be able to join us and help guide us in this discussion about what self-care can look like, what we can do to nurture ourselves in these times in order to make sure that we have the best resources to serve our communities around us. For those of you who haven't had the pleasure of working with Maya, I'll just give a really quick bio. She serves as the Associate Specialist at the Matsunaga Institute for Peace and as a consultant to the Obama Foundation, where she works closely with their international team to develop programming in the Pacific Asia region. Prior to her work with the Obama Foundation, Maya was the director of the Matsunaga Institute, where, in addition to leading outreach and development initiatives, she also taught leadership for social change, history of peace movements, peace education, and conflict management for educators. She is also the co-founder of the nonprofit Seeds of Peace, Institute for Climate and Peace, and Peace Studies. So with that, I will turn it over to one of the best souls I know to help guide us through this conversation. Thank you so much, Maya.
One sec, just trying to figure this out. Here we go. And
am I unmuted?
I can hear you loud and clear. I think everyone Fantastic. Else can too. Wonderful.
Thank you so much, Jose and Amrita, and all of you who are in attendance today and all of you who are assisting with today's webinar. It's lovely to see so many familiar faces as well as some new ones. And I ask only of you now the temptation. Of course, with webinars, and I'm thoroughly guilty of this, is to multitask. While sipping your coffee and holding your kid are, I think, appropriate things to do, I would ask just for a little bit of mindfulness during this time, since that's one of the subjects that we'll be discussing. And my hope is that I'll be able to share some tools and resources with you today and to inspire you to try some new things in the week ahead. So if you want to write down some of those tools and resources, as well as your questions for the Q&A portion, that would be also an appropriate and wonderful thing to do. I am honored and delighted to be here. I've never, of course, received any training in wellness or health. However, I did start to think about the issue of self-care when working with the United States Institute of Peace, and particularly a group called Generation Change, of leaders who worked in conflict spaces. So these were young people, mostly in their 20s, from Syria and South Sudan and Myanmar and many other places where conflict was part of their daily routine. And many of them in their 20s were feeling so burnt out. And so although this time, as I see it, is not a time to get selfish and to get small, right? I mean, this is a time when it's clear that we have to think big about, opportunities for cooperation in light of the enormous conflicts that are taking place around the world. We also are seeing the heights to which people can rise. You see in places like, Jordan and Palestine and Israel coming together and cooperating around the pandemic. And we see, the Seeds of Peace, one of our nonprofits, has, I think, 650 some people who are part of the community resilience HUI conversation, and many of them are sharing ideas and also initiatives and organizations and resources that can be helpful. Please go on our Facebook page. And I think that there is ample evidence of compassion and connection. You can watch John Krasinski's Some Good News features that, and also the Obama Foundation Stories of Hope. And at the same time, this is a time when we have to challenge, meanness, racism, smallness of spirit, and kind of lean into our discomfort and think about what needs to be changed in terms of our environmental advocacy, our economies, our governance, and our leadership. At the same time, these young people in their 20s who are part of Generation Change were already burnt out. In their 20s, they were just so fatigued, and they had witnessed too much of sorrow and sadness and meanness. And so we really saw that there was ample need, for the sake of sustainable leadership and survival, for addressing self-care. So I know that many of you are doing important work. You are courageous. You're worried about friends and family. Some of you may feel lonely and disconnected, or your children do. We have increased levels of stress, especially if you have any underlying depression or mental health issues. Or it's hard not to be pessimistic or to awfulize and catastrophize. And so my hope is that today on this Earth Day, we can share sort of mindfulness and nature-based solutions specifically to reduce your cortisol levels, improve your sleep, increase your energy, to help with activating patience and acceptance, openness, trust, hope, curiosity, to help with letting go of things that cannot be changed, and to acquire a certain gentleness with the self so that we can do the important work ahead of rebuilding and ensuring that our communities, our families, and our world is strong and resilient. So without any further delay, I'd love to just jump in and share some ideas. They're not in any particular order, but I did write down a few here for the purposes of sharing. And I'll just go through, and again, we'll have this more dialogical and in a bit, but let me just do some brain dumping for now. So one of the things is that meditation is an important avenue for mindfulness. And I have, my mala, which I use regularly, and I do seated meditation, zazen. Many of you, I think, are part of spaces of meditation in Palolo and Kalihi. But I do want to just remind you that meditation needn't be challenging. It does not need to take place for 25 minutes. Lately, I have been taking to 1 minute meditation, sitting, walking, laying down in any conceivable space. All I'm doing is thinking about what I can see, touch, smell, and taste. I was talking to my daughter last year, before any of the coronavirus was increasing anxiety, but she was experiencing, you know, some of the anxiety of I think being a teenager. And she expressed some worry that about my death. And, you know, I said to her, sweetie, I'm definitely going to die before you because the alternative is not an option. But just think about all the juicy goodness and love that we can experience today, right now. And we simply looked out the window and we did a 5-4-3-2-1, which is, you know, 5 things you can see, 4 things you can smell, 3 things you can touch, 2 things you can, you know, and of course, taste if possible. But you can also just do a 2-2-2 with all of your senses, anything to kind of bring you back to your body and to develop that mind-body connection. And the great thing about meditation is, of course, that deep breathing is important. And especially with a pandemic where breath is a struggle, we, those of us who are healthy and able, have to think about the value, the beauty, and the power of that breath. And belly breathing really hacks your physiology to make your mind work with you rather than against you. And it is a potent stress buster. Of course, breath can be your ally or your foe. Many people struggle with shallow breath or in times of anxiety. If you have panic attacks, you know, you breathe too rapidly. So finding ways to see meditation as simply slowing down one's breath and regaining control, I think is sufficient. It doesn't have to be hard. I also do a lot of walking meditations. There are many places where today we can still walk. One thing that I try is a slow as possible walk. And that simply means just going out, thinking about how slowly you can move from here to there. And walking slowly is, of course, part of a lot of martial arts and other disciplines that are about finding patience, mindfulness, and strength and discipline. It is so much harder at first than one would think to walk very, very slowly, but you can time yourself or have someone in your family time you and think about how you can keep slowing it down. The same can be said, of course, of mindful eating. You know, Jon Kabat-Zinn famously talked about how to eat a single raisin and wrote a children's book about it, which you can share with your children. And mindful eating just involves looking, touching, seeing, smelling, placing a piece of food on your tongue, swirling it around, getting a mouthfeel, chewing, swallowing, finishing, and then reflecting on the experience, your enjoyment of the experience, the various layered flavors and textures. And of course, you've seen a lot of the memes probably and all of the many social media posts about how fat everyone is getting. I want to make sure there's no fat shaming, and there's a lot of stuff that I find offensive and irritating, but I also want us to be healthy and to enjoy our food and reconnect with our bodies. So dispense with the fat shaming, but I will say that mindful eating is an act of meditation as I see it. There are lots of great ways to do body scans and progressive relaxation where you tighten each body part starting from head down or from toes up, and you squeeze and squeeze. Why don't you do it now, some of you? Squeeze and contract as tightly as possible, and then you release. And you can do this right before bed for an improved sleep. And that awareness allows for the release of tension that has built up over the day. And in some cases, the weeks. Mindful movement is really powerful. Right now, we're using, not enough of our muscles. We're spending too much time sitting. Even if we're getting out, we're not, by virtue of not being able to do the sports or the classes or go to the gym, we're not exercising our body's muscles and joints in the same way and with the same diversity of movement. So I would recommend definitely thinking about this as an important time to do circular movements in particular that connect left side of your body to the right side of the body and demonstrate a wide range of movements. So twists and shoulder rotations where you look back as far as you can on both sides. Qigong movement involves sometimes, wide sweeps of the arms where you gather breath and you really take it in and then you push it down. And you imagine, visualize that breath moving down your body and settling in your na'au, the lower portion of your belly. Circle and turn wide. I think that a lot of movement that allows for sort of detoxification various spaces. So another Qigong movement is a sort of shaking where you shake every part of your body and you bounce, and it kind of releases a lot of tension in ways that are useful and do not take long at all. So all of these strategies are meant to be really short, quick strategies that will enable that reconnection with body. In addition, there are wonderful meditation and mindfulness apps, although we don't really want, to spend more time on our devices. There are ways that we can do that without holding it, the phone, and without feeling like we are looking at a screen. Some that I would recommend that are free at first, at least, and then require some additional investment to kind of unlock other parts are Calm, Insight Timer, Stop Breathe and Think, 10% Happier. And then there are totally free ones like the UCLA Mindful. UCLA has a lot of great resources for mindfulness, and Smiling Mind is another free one. So make use of some of those apps and try, if possible, to keep them away from your body. But, you can hear them without holding them and without looking at them. So you're not getting, more strain to your eyes. I think that there are also great opportunities now to find routines in your home for digital detox. We have a no phone zone in our home. With our family, we have thought about games. Some are more mindful than others, like chess, Jenga, charades. You can create treasure hunts, which we did appropriately for Easter. I hid avocados and bananas and hummus for my no sugar, no salt vegan daughter. But you can, do fun sort of treasure hunts. And there's also a series of table topics. These are cards that you can have on your table that you can use around the dinner table to stimulate discussion and conversation with your family if you are locked down with your family. These table topics are available on Amazon and other means if you can't go out and buy them. But you can also make your own cards, these own questions. Some of them can be light. What is your favorite, ride? What are you looking forward to doing most after lockdown? What is, your favorite memory of a holiday vacation or some of them enable you to access your own childhoods and share that with other members of the family, for you to think about relationships with those who have passed away. And some of them can be challenging conversations and questions that emerge from, like, you know, what are you really afraid of? And I think helping to facilitate in a safe space conversations that are thoughtful and honest and connected is really what your children need, or if you don't have children, what you need to do with and for yourselves and one another. During this time, discussion and conversation is really critically important, and it's a powerful and beautiful opportunity to do that. Tell people how you're doing, really, and listen carefully. Give people permission to identify unhappy or ugly, messy emotions, and make them feel heard. Acknowledge the loss of important milestones like graduations and birthday parties. Reassure your loved ones with facts, but also reassure them that you are there for them. So I mentioned the UCLA Mindful resources. According to a brain scan study that they did and I read about recently, the act of naming and giving voice to our emotions really has demonstrable and powerful impacts in terms of deactivating our amygdala, our emotional stress centers, and activating our critical and higher thinking skills and selves. I really recommend doing little oral histories, create books with one another, mindfully listen to one another, and share an interview about you know, past and present desires for the future. You can ask Kupuna about their heritage. You can make it grounded in culture, but you can also think about intergenerational duets. I also think that a powerful series of tools around mindfulness have to do with minimalism. And I have, I have to say, been completely transformed by minimalist, you know, thinking and reinvention. I no longer, you know, and long before this, use a suitcase or carry a purse or, and it's been more than a decade since I've done that. I have very few belongings. I find it very easy to get, you know, to find new homes for things and to give them away. But I really think that minimalism is a powerful thing now with, again, our devices, our finances, really slowing down and thinking about what we value and want to invest in when we do open up, you know, changing our personal decisions and choices to ensure that we are spending time and resources on the things that matter most. There are so many videos about minimalism on YouTube, not all of them equally powerful. There's, of course, a documentary on Netflix, but check it out if you haven't already. And of course, the most common way that people have engaged minimalism is in thinking about their space. And right now, when you're spending so much time in your homes, thinking about space, both community spaces outside that you're longing for and that are valued to you, and the spaces internally and in your homes and on your devices, you know, are your spaces conducive, both interior and exterior, to who you want to be, to, you know, do they reflect what you value the most? I also think this is a beautiful time for mindful poetry. And what is mindful poetry, you may ask? Joy Harjo and others have, and she, by the way, since this is Earth Day, has you know, lots of poems about one is called Remember. I think Remember the Moon, Know Who She Is, Remember the Sun's Birth at Dawn. That is the strongest point of time. Remember sundown and giving, and the giving away tonight. Remember your birth and how your mother struggled to give you form and breath. You are evidence of her life and her mother's and hers. Remember your father, he is your life also. Remember the earth whose skin you are, red earth, black earth, yellow earth. But she has these poems in addition that I found where on the left side of the poem, these kind of broken up into splintered stanzas, where on the left side, it is what she is noticing mindfully, what and on the right side is what she is thinking internally. And so I saw others who have done beautiful pieces of reflection and writing that are simply about that, finding some kind of space and paying attention to what you are feeling, seeing, thinking, hearing, and you know, and crafting poetry around those things. I'm wanting to be mindful of your time, and I am. Let me go to the chat. I haven't opened it up. Are we okay for time, Jose?
Yes, yes, we're good with time. And no actual questions have come in yet. So I think you could just probably continue on for now.
All right, sounds good.
Thank you, though.
But I also think that, you know, this is a time to reframe your relationship to the natural world, you know, and to consider... everything is sacred. You know, there has been some fake news about dolphins leaping in the canals of Venice and that sort of thing. But we have also seen legitimate sources telling us that the earth and the world is definitely beginning to heal with our lessened presence, both in terms of sound pollution and actual pollution, and in terms of a restoration of you know, space for other species, in terms of the availability. So I want to make sure that we think about how we can reframe our relationship to nature, so that when this crisis is over, and even during the crisis, we can begin to, you know, malama aina, aloha aina, and feel nourished ourselves by the stars stories. And I think that one of the tools that I was utilizing through Mindful Hawaii, which shared with me before the lockdown, was forest breathing. So Phyllis Look does forest breathing both on the windward side and at Lion Arboretum. And she has done one online version, which is frankly less effective, but when things reopen, you can go and have a guided forest breathing session with her. But you can go yourselves in the meantime to natural spaces that are available right now and do forest breathing. Does not bathing. You do not have to be nude, and in fact should not be nude unless it's a space where you will not be subjecting anyone to things that they do not wish to see. But bathing simply means bathing the spirit with the gifts of the forest, right? And utilizing again all of the senses. So a lot of beautiful mindful techniques involve things like watching everything in motion. So it's a series of invitations that are extended. And one of them was a very slow 20-minute walk where we were to pay attention to everything in motion, birds, leaves falling, but you know, getting low onto the soil and observing all of the activity on blades of grass, thinking about moving with those things in motion, and mindfully sort of communing in nature, and all of that really helps relieve stress, boosts immunity, lowers heart rates, blood pressure, and decreases stress hormones. Another invitation might be to go and find a treasure that the forest has left you and to sort of marvel at its intricacies. Another invitation is to, again, read a poem and to consider it at the base of a tree of your choice. Another invitation is to close your eyes and be guided by a partner to think, you know, to consider the terrain beneath you as you walk blindfolded or with eyes closed, you know, guided safely, of course, and to kind of reconnect the soles of your feet to the earth beneath. So these and many other invitations are extended and then shared in a small community in something that you can do in any outdoor place for yourself. I think that, again, I want to share with you that there are virtual ways to see incredible natural beauty and bounty. You can now go online to bear witness to some of the incredible nature at Badlands National Park, Glacier National Park, Arches National Park, the Great Wall of China, wildlife cams in Kenya and Tanzania, there's Sequoia National Park, there's Mars even. You can go online and look at Mars. These are 3D cameras that allow you to see beluga whales leaping and to engage in bird watching if you can't reach those destinations. I also want to call attention to biomimicry on this Earth Day. And there is a Biomimicry Institute that has, it's not over yet. You can still sign up, I think, for like 30 days of reconnection on biomimicry. And biomimicry, for those of you who don't know, it's an approach to innovation and connectedness that sort of seeks sustainable solutions to human problems and challenges by emulating nature's sort of time-tested patterns and strategies, right? So if we apply this to our current context, we can think about it in terms of breakdown. Some of us are breaking down. Society is breaking down. Well, if you look at nature and nature's breakdowns, you see some extraordinary things. A caterpillar in the way that it self-destructs inside the cocoon to emerge gorgeous and soaring as a butterfly. There's a moment where a seed begins to crack open and become exposed, and new life and new form and new fruit emerge from it's sprouting. And for a seed to do this, it must first become completely undone. The shell cracks and its inside comes out, and you can see this on camera, and everything changes. And for someone who doesn't understand growth, right, this looks very much like destruction. And so metaphorically speaking, it's an impressive and powerful opportunity for us to consider the ways in which our breaking down will enable us to, once we process the breakdown, and once we begin to trust and in that feeling of pressure, and that feeling of discomfort, and how it has the capacity to create moments of growth, will be very useful. This understanding is akin to sort of what is necessary, I guess, to move from post-traumatic stress to post-traumatic growth, right? Then many of us are traumatized right now. Some of you know people who have died or are very ill, and then there's just the trauma of fear and the trauma of losing losing a sense of a security of former self. And so this breakdown is something that we need to think about in terms of how we can build leadership through adversity and reframe, wash our eyes, as I like to say, and find new pathways forward. You can't fully control how this crisis will unfold, but you can manage your energy and before and during and after the breakdown, and hopefully that will help you break through to the other side. I often begin in recent years with asking students to name their water, their wind, their fire, their earth, right? And their water is perhaps a physical body of water where they swam, where that connects the various places they call home. But water can also be the place of bathing, of soothing, of renewal, and of healing. Fire can be a volcano, a sunrise, but it can also be the fire in the belly. And you get the idea. The idea is to consider I would like for you to consider your water, your wind, your fire, your earth, and you know, maybe you will find in this sort of act of biomimicry a new fire, and maybe a new wind will propel you forward, and you'll redefine things for yourself in ways that feel good, that feel free, that feel spacious, and make you feel powerful. And maybe that's the sort of silver lining thinking we need, or maybe this time just sucks. But if it just sucks, and if there's only, you know, survival to be had, and endurance, I trust that all of you will remain resilient and emerge on the other side whole and still feeling connected. Connected to the planet, to its communities, connected to that part of you that is most stable, you know, healthiest, connected to the sun rising and the clean water that you have around you. And even if you can't control that tidal wave, you know, you can manage your own flow, your energy, your openness, your rhythms around sleeping. So practice good sleep hygiene. Make sure you have enough darkness, get some essential oils going, stay away from your devices in the hour before. Think about those body scans, sound machines. Think about making sure you're not too hot. Making sure that you have soft things against your skin. Making sure that you are thinking about the good news around you. And with mindfulness, meditation, and reconnection, I hope that your intuition will provide answers either in your dreams or in your waking life. So I am going to close with that. And, oh, you know what? Maybe I'll, I think.
Maya, so just to keep you a little organized with all the questions we've been getting since last, so we said we had no questions, they started coming in. So thank you, everyone. Carol, had a question about the name of Minimalism documentary on Netflix. If you could just...
It's called Minimalism.
Oh, okay. Wonderful.
And it's these two young men and who sort of, you know, I think they were... If I recall correctly, I watched it some time ago, but I think they were like sort of corporate guys who did relatively well in that space. One of them, his mother died, and he became the recipient of so many of her belongings. And he realized at a certain point he didn't need to keep those to feel connected. And in fact, they felt burdensome. And they start on this documentary where they go around and they start thinking about making different choices and interview others on the choices they make to arrive at an understanding of less is more, and looking at various places and spaces where these lessons emerge. I think that a lot of since then, or maybe even before, there are a lot of great sort of Japanese minimalists who are using sort of a Zen approach to it. There's Kintsugi pottery, which I would love to share with you. I'm thinking of it now in terms of this time and the subject that we were just discussing. Well, we weren't discussing, but I was just talking about of breakdown. So kintsugi pottery is that, it's that pottery in Japan where it takes broken things puts them back together with gold sealant, kind of investing this, you know, resources to put something together in a way that honors the breakage and honors both the life that it had before and kind of this new life that a piece of pottery can have. When you think about that, the idea is to, you know, throw away less, value more what you have, and to engage in that mindfulness and to sort of reawaken a sense of possibility. I think that there are also, as I say, a ton of kind of contemporary iterations that on YouTube, in addition to the documentary. I have this story, which I told before, but I haven't told, I don't think, in a while. It was when my 15-year-old daughter was maybe five, and I was living on Vineyard Street in an apartment that I owned but did not decorate. And I was on the phone in my bedroom, and I heard this really loud crash. And came out, and all of the cabinets in the kitchen had fallen. It was shoddy construction, and I guess there were just nails that went straight in, and there were no brackets keeping it up, and I had put too much stuff in there. And I noticed that among the things that were broken, weirdly, the only things that were not broken were some bamboo bowls from the Philippines, and then a couple of, it was, I think, Eeyore and Piglet mugs from Disneyland that were very sturdy, as it happens. But everything else was broken, including all of my mother's wedding dishes, my grandmother's wedding dishes, and all of these teapots, some of which I know belonged to my in-laws and were, I think, somewhat valuable and quite old and ornate. And I mourned for just a second, and then I realized that my five-year-old, or I don't, no sense of time, I don't know how old she was, but she was old enough that she had started to assert her independence by going and washing the dishes with me and being a big girl. And the sink to wash the dishes was right underneath those cabinets. And had she been there and not sick and on the couch watching My Fair Lady, then she would have been terribly injured and perhaps even killed. I mean, those were heavy cabinets. And so in recognition of what gave me immense relief, I was kind of instantly dematerialized in a way. And I very cheerfully swept up all of that stuff. And I too realized that I did not need those things to remember my mother, my grandmother. And interestingly, I had never used any of those dishes for fear of chipping them. So after that, I keep around me those things that I care about, and I use them in this life and in this moment. And that is also part of both my minimalism and my mindfulness. It is hard to get started sometimes with letting go, but once you do, something beautiful grows. So here is the poem that I was going to read to you before the Q&A. And this is a Wendell Berry, who is an environmental activist and poet you probably know. There's some great stuff on being with Krista Tippett. She she did a whole series for, I guess, Earth Day or Earth Month. We are part of an intricate web of physical relations, you know, he argues, and it's important to consider those relations also in terms of natural relations, and it's important for us to turn towards our grief, for instance, around climate change, or in this instance, our pandemic, but also for us to find freedom through making peace with wild things. I'll just read a portion of it. When despair for the world grows in me and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things. And I love, you know, since I love the wild things. but I think that it's a lovely poem to think about how we do have this great tool and resource in the beauty that surrounds us and in the piece of wild things that we can find. But okay, I'm going to take my video off and I'm just going to take you through a 2-minute kind of guided meditation then. I'm going to take my video off so that you're just listening to my voice. How do I do that? Okay, here we go. Stop video. All right. If you can think about your posture, seated meditation is really beautiful. But I want you to make sure that you are seated in such a way that doesn't cause imbalance, where your left butt cheek and right butt cheeks are kind of equally distributing your weight. If you can put your feet on the floor and really feel the floor beneath you, feel its temperature, feel its texture, curl your toes a little bit. Push your shoulders back and roll your head from side to side. Roll it left and then forward. Roll it right. Back again. Roll it around from right to left. Take your hand and press your head towards your left shoulder gently. Feel the stretch in your neck, but also at the top of your shoulder, a stretch perhaps in your spine. Do the same thing on the other side. Excellent. If you would take your shoulder blades and see if you can make them touch. Of course you can't, but press your shoulders back. We spend so much time hunched over. Take your arms and lift them slightly. Let your palms face the sky above and lean back. Lean back. Take your shoulders and roll them up. Shrug them. Okay, put your arms down and do shoulder rotations where you shrug your shoulders up to your ears and back around, up to your ears, back around. And now go the opposite direction, pressing them backwards and then forward. All right, now close your eyes. Scrunch your face up into a little tiny pin in front of your mouth and nose. Now open your mouths and let your jaw go slack. Ah, make a big sound. Ah, great. It's good to just get the body a little loose before meditating. You can do that in many different ways. All right, keeping your eyes closed, take a deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth. Really release that breath again in through your nose and out through your mouth. Keep breathing quietly to yourself in through your nose and out through your mouth. And we're going to just do a quick body scan from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. Relax your forehead, your eyebrows, your eyes. 9. Relax your ears, your nose, your mouth, your tongue, your neck. 8. Relax your shoulders. Keep breathing in through your nose and out through your mouth. Let those shoulders really hang down. Relax your spine, your chest. 7. Relax your abdomen. 8. Relax your back, the muscles on either side of your spine, your hips. 6. Relax your thighs, your knees. 5. Relax your calves, your shins. 4. Relax your ankles, tops of your feet, your toes. 3. Relax the soles of your feet and the palms of your hands. 2. Relax your fingertips, your elbow tips, every tip on your body. 1. Make sure you're still breathing. Fill yourself with breath. And as you do, imagine the sunlight streaming into your body through every orifice, your nose, your mouth, your ears. Imagine your insides being bathed with light. It's gentle, it's warm. It's coursing through and clearing out any stress, the weight of yesterday, the worry of tomorrow. It's making you feel soft in all of your body. Imagine yourself getting lighter, brighter. So light that you're lifting. You're soaring. You're going out the window. You're above, looking down on the things that you value, the things you treasure. And you're floating across the ko'olau, or in my case, wherever you happen to be. Across the mountains, the treetops. You're finding a freedom that you so needed. And in this space, you can laugh. You hear bird song. You watch wistfully the shapes of the clouds go by. Now I want you to imagine you are descending ever so lightly, gently and safely into some place that makes you feel inspired and calm. Some place drenched with beauty where you can wash your eyes and bathe your spirit and renew and really take a look at that place. What are you seeing? What are you hearing? Is there a taste that this place has? What textures are you feeling beneath you and beside? What do you feel against your skin? Is anyone here with you, or are you alone? Really bring color and fill in all of the nooks and crannies around you. Recognize perhaps here the spirit and energy of those whom you love, protecting you, making you feel safe and whole. This is your community, your ancestors, your kupuna, your family, your friends, your loved ones. Slowly let that space fill up. But not in such a way that you feel crowded or distracted, but just that allows you to recognize the full beauty and bounty of your life, this present, this moment, this day, and to feel drenched with gratitude for all that we are given. And now, amid this crowded and gorgeous celebration, if you can imagine yourself rising up again, returning back across the sky, hovering above those treetops and rooftops, back into the place where you sit right now. Hopefully, calmer and more mindful and refreshed. Then you can open your eyes when you want. So, I mean, I think that I just made that one up. Mary, but I think that, you know, if we can be sojourners in our minds and imaginations, that's a great thing to do. And just anything that you can do with yourself to bring yourself back into your body, to kind of open up those spaces in your body, but also to begin to imagine those things that are not there.
Thank you, Maya. One of the last questions here, Michael North suggested, would you propose possibly a short forgiveness meditation?
I am happy to do that. I also feel, Michael, that Michael, who you know, you, I know, has worked with the Forgiveness Project. Maybe there is someone, you or someone else here who's doing it. I feel like a lot of people have heard from me and my voice, and perhaps it would be good to have someone else lead such a meditation. Does anyone want to volunteer?
Since everyone's muted right now, if you want to just, in the chat option, just nominate yourself or nominate someone, and I can definitely unmute them to. Oh, wonderful. Okay, I think let's get this going.
I think Michael is part of like a forgiveness project.
Yep. I think Michael is nominating himself to do it.
That sounds good.
Michael, you there?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful, there you are.
Yes, Maya, it's good to hear your thoughtful, musical voice always. And thank you for being such a powerful leader of our community of Aloha. Thank you for all.
Thank you, that's very kind.
One of the things that we've learned in our journeys through the landscapes of forgiveness over the past 20 years or so is interconnectedness is key. So there's a meditation that we've used in which you begin with your left hand as receiving and your right hand as giving. So if we imagine our circle here of 90 people or so, our lei, our living tea leaf lei, and feel with your breath coming in through your left hand and up your arm and to your heart with an inhale. And then with a moment's pause, with an exhale, coming down your right arm and out your palm. So from the circle comes the energy of sky from all of us. You bring it to your heart and purify it for a moment. And then give it back out through your right and back to the circle. So if we did this, all of us, with three breaths, we would purify the planet. Mahalo, aloha, ohana. Thank you, Maya, and all Matsunaga and peace people.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And I really do think that, you know, if you have a chance to spend today looking at some of the great resources, youth are leading the way on Earth Day, and you know, they're... There is a lot being put on Volunteer Week by Hawaii Green Growth and the SDGs and I think that I've got to start my video. I think that the meditation that you did, Michael and Chalfan, you know, this notion of our connectedness that it highlights, you know, that being an essential part of forgiveness. We need to forgive one another for our limitations or for, you know, for for greed, but I think the emphasis in a positive, peace way can be on that reconnection. And there are so many ways that we can volunteer again. Check out the Hawaii Green Growth Local 2030 Hub. But there are numerous other ways that we can not simply seek forgiveness, but you know, sort of honor that connection with a variety of volunteers. If you can't get to the lo'i and the fish ponds and the farms right now, you know, maybe there's something that you can do on this Earth Day. Just wanted to make recommendations that I and I think. Can I ask you? Are there opportunities also for at ACR and through the Campus Climate and the Center for Alternative Dispute Resolution? Are there other opportunities perhaps that can be shared with you folks for that for any volunteering? I also wanted to say that Zephanie, who I think is on this call, helped me to put together a list. It's like 40 pages long of resources that I would also love to share, through the Matsunaga Institute of Digital and Distance resources, some of which I mentioned, that will enable you to connect with people and places far away in ways that are hopefully nourishing. So thank you all as I say goodbye, and thank you for that closing, and aloha and mahalo for being here.